What's going on, Draft Sickos? We are days away from the 2026 NBA Draft, and that means we still have time to get in another film session. This time, I'm very excited for this one. Doing this exercise with point guards is always my absolute favorite, and there might not be a better point guard to do this with in this draft in the country than Braden Smith out of Purdue. So, Braden, thank you so much for chopping it up with us today, man.
Yeah, no, thank you guys. I appreciate you having me.
So before, you know, we get into your film, just for anybody who isn't super familiar with your game, you know, or, you know, maybe if they're watching after the draft, whatever team, the fans are watching this replayed back, how would you describe your game for those people?
I said very unselfish. Try to just put teammates first and get them the ball where they can be successful. And when I need to score and do what I need to do on my end, that's what happens. Defensively, just try to cause some chaos and try to pressure the ball, heat it up a little bit, get some steals, and lead it to some quick offensive points. So,
yeah. So let's get right into it. Let's get into your film because I think the visuals will do a good job of showing all of those intricacies. I was in person for this one. I've seen you a number of times over the years. And right after this pass, I was like, you know what? Let's wrap this thing up. I might be able to just go home. Take me through this one. This one, I was just like, all right, this thing's over.
Yeah, I think we were kind of in a flow here, scoring a couple times, then we were getting stops. So for us, it's just we're going transition, pushing it. Obviously, Trey still kind of getting in there. Fletch just got in on that wing up on the opposite side over there. But, I mean, for me, it's just another routine pass. To be honest, I'm being serious. It's just like it's normal for me. I've practiced it so much. I've done it so much. So, I didn't realize that's like the little window it was in until I saw it after. I was like, it was a lot closer than I thought. But also, you're just reading. Like, this is a film session, so people like to understand the way. So, like, for me, like, Ogboli, the big guy here, he's up more on my right-hand side. And I also know the guard got hit because Clough set a good screen, so he's going to be delayed a little bit. So for me, I'm able to get it in that window because if he's going to play on that top side, I can wrap it around the back and be able to get it to him.
You mentioned that screen there from Clough, and you also mentioned how you played with some really talented bigs during your time at Purdue. Talk to us for the listeners out there who don't really understand what they're watching sometimes when it comes to screens. Talk to us the importance of having a really great screener when you're running ball screens and the type of impact the type of advantages they create just by setting a good screen and then you coming off tight off those screens with good angles.
No, so it's a two-way street. So one, it's how good your screener is, and obviously two, how you can set up the screen. And I think in that clip, what was really important is Clough got separation so early from his defender. Like there was that gap window. That gap window, and that window is my decision-making time. So for me, I'm like, okay, well, so normally we work on it, get into his body, push off, go run up to the screen. Because that window that you have, and if I set it up good and he's hit, that's the window we have for that pocket pass. So like, it just makes it so much easier. So having a good big that understands how to screen and knows how to screen makes not only my job easier, but normally gets him a bucket or someone else a bucket almost every time. And that's what we worked with Clough. At least early on, like I was just telling him, like, hey, if you set these screens and you hold them, I promise you, you're going to be open. And he looked at me like I was stupid early on, but I was just like, dude, like, trust me, like, I promise, I'll get you buckets. So he did a good job setting it up and getting the screen, and obviously the rest is history.
Now, I like this one too, you know, just because it's kind of improvisational, it's a little saucy, so, you know, we could start here too. What do you see in here? You got the look off. You know, broken semi-transition, defense not set. So what are you reading in these situations?
So for me, always in transition, it's always to get under that free throw line. So free throw line extended kind of below that, because then it makes it hard for that big to guard that. Because how are you going to guard that? You're gonna trap me? Okay, well, it's just going to be a dump down. It's going to be a dunk. Or your low man's going to have to pull over, and it's probably still going to be a dunk. So that's going to be an issue. Or he's going to be in drop. So I'm coming off, getting to that Big Ten logo area right in the middle, either having a jumper or kick out to shooters or dump down to the big. So for me, it was just getting as low as I can. I knew Enright, he's obviously a very physical defender and aggressive defender. So for me, I knew he's biting on that screen. And so as you can see, he ran into it. And then from there, it's just simple reads. Like, it's, you got to use your eyes to manipulate. You got to use pass fakes to manipulate. Once you do that, it just creates opportunities for you that makes it just so much easier. And obviously, Fletch is an unbelievable shooter, so makes my job easy.
Now, yeah. I want to go back into the half court a little bit, and I want to talk about this shot right here, because this is one of your money shots.
Yep.
And I always feel like, while, you know, the discourse around the mid-range jumper seems to be like, oh, it's not analytically friendly, for a point guard who truly understands the art of playmaking like you do, I feel like it unlocks everything. So can you talk to me a little bit about the importance of getting to these elbows?
It's super important. And I'm not biased. Like, you're watching the top players in the league do it. What does Jalen Brunson do? What does Shea do? What do those guys do? They shoot the mid-range, and they're capable of doing that because it makes them that much better. So for me, my job is, like, I'm not stupid. I'm not going to go shoot a layup over a 7-footer when I'm 5'11". Like, that just doesn't, that percentage isn't high. So people want to talk about analytics, like, well, tell me how smart that is. So, like, to me, that's my layup. So that's what I put a lot of time on working, because then also it makes the big have to make a decision. And if I'm coming off hitting that shot, he's still on the drop there. And I knew that's what we're getting. They're either switching five ways, which was what they do, or they're going to be in a drop with Trey right there. And for me, it's just coming off making a simple read and shooting it.
And Chris Paul, another guy who is close to your height, right? Made
Chris
Paul played in the NBA for 20 years.
Yep.
Like, you know, like, and especially like at that height, for to have the longevity he had, it's because he could get to that spot and it manipulates the entire defense. And you know, this one I wanted to highlight too, because I think, like, your setup is really crafty here. And, you know, it, right as the screen comes, I mean, one, you're doing two things. One, you're getting into his body and you hit him right as the screen comes, and then that right leg swings over the screen and he can't get through it as easily. Yeah. Right. So talk to me about, like, the setups as that screen is coming.
I didn't really learn that until maybe my junior year, senior year. Like, I was so bad at it my first 2 years, because I was just like, I'm quicker than everybody. I'm just going to try to run and use my speed. And it doesn't work. It works, but not all the time. So for me, especially with a smaller, quicker defender, I say smaller, my height, but to me, like, a smaller, quicker defender on me, rather than like a Yaxel, taller guy, like, the two different types of guys. So for me, a smaller defender, if you can bump him and run him into that screen, especially a good defender, like, what is he going to do? And I talked to Trey. I'm like, you got to hold these screens. Clough, you got to hold these screens, because I'm going to run him into him, because then it's going to put DeVries, who's guarding Trey, in a tough decision. Because me and Trey, I think, were probably the number one pick and roll duo in a very long time in that area. So for him, he's got to make a decision of me shooting my layup coming off, or Trey shooting his layup, which is technically a floater. So it's really just a simple read from there.
Yeah. And again, like, now, like, you being such a threat there, it makes your life easier as a playmaker, which you've been kind of alluding to. And I think, you know, obviously different games here, but the idea is the same. And you're also somebody who enjoys a jump pass. So take me through this one and what you're reading and what those elbow jumpers have opened up for you here.
So first thing, as always, you're trying to change the defender's feet, which is what I did, which he was backed up on me. But you always want to try to go as quick as you can one way, and you're, because we already know the play beforehand. Like, I know it coming up the floor. So we're like, all right, I'm going left, I'm coming off right. So you got to go as fast as you can left to make him think you're turning the corner baseline and try to change his feet. You change his feet, it makes it so right there. Change his feet, Clough sets a good screen, and everybody knows is that mid-range is what I shoot. So the big's going to play up as I'm coming up to shoot it, and then it's just a simple read, and it's just a layup. So I really had either. I think I got yelled at to shoot it on this one, to be honest, but it's all right.
Brayden, we scored. Brayden, something that you've kind of run through with us through every clip is, like, simple read, simple read, simple read. But I'm sure from your freshman year till now, it became a simple read, right? So if you can, talk to us a little bit about your development over the years in terms of, like, reading the floor, right? Especially plays like this where it became a simple read. But talk to us about that progression and development and growth over the years at Purdue.
Yeah, no, it definitely has been kind of crazy, to be honest. Like, I think coming in as a high school, you know, kid and trying to play college, like, I got away with jumping in the air and passing it a lot, looking, jumping, staying there long. Because in high school, you can get away with that. But obviously, as you're with you're up another level. You're with a lot more talented guys and playing against talented people. Like they catch on to that. So it was actually a hard lesson I had to learn early on, and I still did it. Like I still got in trouble my senior year doing it, jumping in the air, making stupid decisions, and it's habit and trying to break that habit. But also having PJ around, our assistant coach who played at Purdue and played the point guard position, like it helps having people who understand. And he kind of was like my biggest mentor on that, and understanding like, all right, like you got to understand you can't jump all the time. Like you can jump entire game except for the last 5 minutes of a basketball game. And then they'd be like, you got to be simple, smart, play off 2 feet, do those things because we'll score. So for me, that was one of the things. But two, like I've always had like just the mindset of seeing people. I always made those decisions. I was always capable of doing it. I think it was just sharpening it and perfecting it to the point to where it was a lot better. And I think gradually each year I started figuring out new things and new ways to, you know, do those type of things.
I think when you're talking about the jump passing, like I remember hearing Tyrese Halliburton, who was a guy who jump passes a lot, said that it like has to be intentional, right? Like you can't get stuck in the air, because not everybody, like Derrick Rose was another jump passer, but he was an athletic freak and he could just hang in the air longer than everybody. But like with Tyrese Halliburton, it was like, it has to be intentional. And that last clip, you're going into your jumper. So now you're using it as, oh, they think I'm going to shoot. And now I'm giving a little bit of extra room to my roller. I'm causing a few seconds on the margins. It's going to create an open look. So like, I do think that the jump pass, when there's intentionality behind it, this actually makes you dangerous.
Yeah. Cause like coming off that, especially you got to know who you're playing against too. You got to understand like a lot of teams, like it's funny, people like, so I shot fake a lot. And the coaches before the game, like tip off hasn't even happened. They're like, stay down, stay down. So I'm like, okay, you're telling me to do that. I'm just going to shoot it. And you're just going to stay down. You're not going to contest it. I'm just going to shoot it. So like for me, like it's those type of things, and understanding like Arizona, like those bigs contested some, and same with like Michigan, like those type of teams, they contested some. So being able to get that understanding that going into the game, okay, if that does happen, you have an outlet, like you have a chance, because or he's going to look up and try to follow the ball. But it's just a zip pass straight down to the big. So,
and the stay down. I'm sure opposing coaches were saying that about Jalen Brunson every night too. And right, like and he'll pump fake you and footwork you to death in that little mid range area. Now, back into your film, you know, we show you, you know, getting to the elbow, knocking the shot down. We see you kind of hitting the roll. And now that like you're capable of punishing the drop, now the low man's got to make sure that he's in the right spot, right? So what does that open up now?
I mean, it opens up everything, because obviously Trey is capable to catch that short roll pass and make reads out of it. But as I'm coming off, like you're reading multiple different things. The first thing you're reading is the low man. So if I'm coming off right here, that guy in the corner on the opposite side, which I know we went the other way, but you're watching that low man because you're seeing what he's doing, because that guy's on a two-man side. So if I'm driving opposite, he's going to take low on the big. So then it'll be two shooters over there with one guy in the middle. So for me, it's just making a simple read, getting it out of my hands, and then they'll play two-on-one. But for here, it's just the same thing, except it's a single side, and he's in pretty big help. Like, I think he comes with a Big Ten logo. Yep, comes to the Big Ten level. So it's just a simple read to a shooter in the corner.
Yeah, and when you can make all of these different reads, right, now you can kind of just play with the defense. And again, these are all different teams here, but now you got Avisic. You're playing the cat and mouse game with him, and he's kind of not committing either way, right? So take me through this one.
Yeah, no, it's just, first off, setting it up, one. Two, with bigs, like, they're always trying to block and trying to do those things. So for me, if I see a switch, like I obviously know I went past Andre here. So for me, it's okay, I got the big on me. I'm going to dribble through. Cause if he follows me, like if I wouldn't have passed that and dribbled through, no one would have guarded me. I would have had whatever. Cause if you see the big fella, he stops. Andre's behind him. So like for me, I could have had whatever, but with this, they're trying to stop the rim. Hummerkaus, who's supposed to be guarding Jack, is actually in the paint. So for me, it's just a simple read. Being able to see, if I would have jumped in the air, I could have got caught. Right. But being able to make those dribble throughs, that's what I've learned over time. Okay, if you can get that dribble through instead of jumping and try to throw it wherever, you get the dribble through, you get more options to pass out of it.
Really quickly, you just mentioned how, like, when you're going up against these types of bigs, you kind of know what they're going to be like. And I think, like, with you, the conversation is going to be like, okay, you're going up another level, bigger, stronger defenders, blah, blah, blah. But with your reasoning and your logic with what you just told us, it feels like they can get taller and they can get bigger, but the way I'm reading the floor and reacting is going to be exactly the same. So talk to us a little bit about how you're answering that question when NBA teams ask you that.
I honestly love it. Because a lot of people think that, like, yes, it is a different level of basketball, but at the same time, like, I understand basketball at such a high level that I'm at that level.
Yeah.
Like, I'm there. I'm above. And that's not to make me better than other people, but I'm just that confident myself, and I know. Like, I understand basketball. I read it differently. I see things before they've happened. So for me, like, it's just another simple read. And you have five guys out there that shoot 40% from three. Not three or four. You have all five that can shoot. So for me, it's going to be more spread open, which is what I use and what I'm good at because I'm quick. I manipulate with my eyes, my body, whatever it is. I get the paint. I can dribble through. People are always going to try to be more physical and whatever, but I'd like to take my chances on that. So
I think when you talk about your mind, you see things differently. I think part of that, it seems like you really know your personnel, is that these guys are big. So you have different options, right? And now here you kind of get hard hedged. This is a different pass that you can make than if you were throwing it to Clough or Trey, right?
Yep. No, 100%. And that's knowing our personnel. Like, Daniel's never a short roll guy. So for me, if I ever throw that bounce pass, that's for me to get blamed for. Like, that's not Daniel's fault if he drops that. So for me, I'm letting him roll a little bit more and get in front of that low man who is Holloway. And because Trey's going to be behind, so then we have Fletch on the opposite side, so they're going to play that second action if that gets there. But for me, I'm watching Holloway, and he's not going to come help because he's guarding Fletch. So for me, it's just that extra dribble I took right there at the end. It's just giving Daniel an extra half second just to get to that rim. But like Clough, that can be a direct pass, Trey, direct pass, or that pocket pass.
Like right here, they're not vertically explosive, and you can kind of dump it off and fit that in.
Really quickly, when it comes to your passing, just wanted to come back to it for a second. Something that I wonder a lot about, like, really great passers that I always like to ask is, do you feel like that's something that you're kind of innately born with, like that feel for where your teammates are on the floor? Or is it more of just like you really got to develop that, you can learn this type of skill and then get better? Or once again, like, do you feel like you're kind of born with that ability?
I think it's like you're 85-90% born with it, and then the rest you kind of can learn just through, one, knowing your offense. Like I knew in our offense, like when they called this play, where everybody will be or where they should be. Sometimes they weren't, and sometimes I may have made a bad read or whatever, but most of the time I know where they're always going to be. So like for me, it's like, okay, well, you know your reads. First off, you're coming off looking for your jump shot. Second, you're coming off looking for the pocket pass. Second, you're looking for the skip out. Like, you always have these reads in your mind for each play. So I think it's a mixture of that. But I think, like, being able to see and have that vision, I think it's just something you just kind of have or you don't have. And I think that's just something I was gifted with.
Who are some of your favorite playmakers that you watched growing up?
Obviously, Steve Nash, Jason Williams, those type of guys. I mean, not necessarily a playmaker, but Steph Curry. Like, he's my favorite of all time, so I watch a lot of him. But those first two, for sure. In this new era, obviously, like a Brunson, I watch Shea a lot. Tyrese, I watch basketball in general. Like, I don't really just like, yep, him. I'm gonna just watch him. Like, now, like, I have like a mix of everybody. So for me, it's just a lot of different people, and I don't think I'm really just at one. Like, you can't make, yep, Braden's like that. I think I'm kind of my own, I would like to think. So I don't know, but it's a mixture of everything, just being born with that and also just learning it over time.
And we talked about your ability to punish guys in the mid-range. I think that doesn't mean that that's the only shot that you can hit, right? So
yeah,
when guys are in that playing a little bit higher but are dropped, like, you've upped over the last 2 years comparatively to your sophomore season, you upped like your 3-point rate. So how important do you think this shot is going to be for you as well at the next level?
It's super important because obviously that's what will make my reads even easier. Because if I'm coming off hitting that, that means that big's going to have to come up. Mm-hmm. Like when you watch Curry, they're not sitting. I mean, some do because I don't know what they're doing, but most what they should do is be up on that and kind of honestly just trap them. But like for me, it'll make that read so much easier. And that's what Coach Paint and PJ has always told me, is that like when I'm aggressive, it makes passing that much easier, which is my strength. So like if I'm aggressive and scoring and shooting, it makes my number one strength the best that it could be, which makes it pretty hard to stop.
I kind of see that here. Like they put two on the ball and you're able to make a tough read, but a read that all of the best playmakers are able to make. So take me through this one.
Yeah, no, it's obviously that this entire game they were trapping, trying to get it out of my hands. And it was kind of similar to Houston my junior year. Just like my job is, like PJ is also and Payne have also said the entire time, like take what the game gives you. And if that's to go out and score 30, like I had to at Alabama versus Illinois versus those teams, like then go do it. But mm-hmm. if it takes for me to pass it and get out of my hands, which this game it did, and let guys make shots, make the right read, it's what I got to do. So for me, it's everybody's always like, well, why aren't you consistently scoring 20 a game? I said, because I'm not getting consistently guarded the same. Like there's games I'm getting double teamed every single time. They're getting out of my hands. What do you want me to do? You want me to go dribble through three people and try to go make a tough play every single possession? Like it's stupid. So like for me, it's just making a simple read, and I'm capable of making this pass. So I'm going to get him a shot and get him open bucket.
How long did it take you to be comfortable? And maybe you've always just been that way with being like, okay, I'm just going to take what the defense gives you. What was it like finding that balance, I guess, maybe at the college level where, okay, I'm going to be more aggressive now because they're guarding me this way versus I'm going to be more of a playmaker and I'll be aggressive making plays because they're guarding me this way?
Still learning it today. Like it's still something I'm still learning. Like it's because it's so different, because like I'm such a perfectionist and so hard on myself. So for me, it's like, well, I didn't score in the first half. And PJ would always be like, well, you're good. Like you got 20 minutes. It's a long game. I'm like, 20 minutes is long. Like it goes by quick. And then like that game, I think it was Iowa at home this past year. I had zero, finished with 26, I think, in the second. And he's like, I told you. And I was like, you're lucky. I said, you're lucky that worked. But like for me, it's just finding that balance always. And obviously in the NBA, I'm not going to have the usage rate or role that I'm going to have in the NBA. Like I'm not stupid. So like I had to understand, okay, you have 3 to 4 minute spurts. Okay, cool. Like maximize the best of that I can in that time. So that's going to be defensively. That's going to be pressuring the ball, trying to cause, turnovers, get steals, try to cause those things, but also being capable of one, playing off the ball and doing kind of what CJ is doing here. Just let's whoever I'm playing with, being able to just stand there if I'm a secondary ball handler, whatever the case is, or I can help a primary ball handler go sit and take a break and be able to still go out there and play basketball because I can make reads and do those things.
Yeah. I mean, you saw Jose Alvarado play finals minutes and do a lot of those things that you just mentioned. Like you kind of fit in where you fit in and you contribute the way that you've contributed your whole life. Now, I want to add this clip in. I want to see how, what would you do differently here? Obviously like you're a very cerebral, smart player, but there's also a level of creativity and flair and, you take chances, which I think is important. For guards, because you're not just, oh, I'm going to pass one pass away. Like these are game breaking plays. And you had a 3-to-1 assist turnover ratio. So like, obviously you're a great decision maker, but what would you do differently on this one?
Yeah, no, first of all, it was a terrible read. What I saw is when I took that first dribble coming off the screen from Clough is that he was going to help in. And two, Clough didn't roll, which that's not his fault. I threw the pass, but he's got to roll. Because if he rolls, that makes that guy help, which is what I thought he was doing. So it was just one of those things, like a little jump in the air to make a pass. And what I should have done was just back it out, swing it to CJ, throw it to Fletch, and we get into post offense or whatever the case is. But it's just a mixture of different things. It's one, I got to stay on my feet and be smart. Two, understand I don't have anywhere to go. They got me covered up and just to reverse it. So
now this one is, I want to go back to your mid-range shooting, because a lot of the mid-range shots that you take, you get to and you kind of do like these tough like fadeaways. But what stuck out to me when this year especially, I saw you and Omer pregame unguarded shooting shots where you were like getting to this exact spot and fading. So this is something you practice.
Yeah. Well, cause I understand like those are the shots that I'm gonna shoot. It's like I'm not gonna go out there and work on my dunks. like I'm gonna go out there and shoot the shot that I'm gonna shoot in the game. So for me, it's, I know I'm, we have for Purdue, for an instance, like we have 20 sets that we're gonna run. We have 5 to 10 out of bounds plays that we know that we're gonna run. Cause this is how they guard, and every team guards differently. So for me, it's like, I'm gonna get to the shot. I'm gonna shoot it in this elbow area, the Big Ten logo area, or even like on that wing. So just to shoot those shots, and you got to be comfortable shooting. Like you watch Curry, and everybody's like, "Oh, he's crazy for shooting it under his hand, behind his back, over his head, that type of thing." Like, I mean, you watch him in game; he shoots those shots. Like, you, and I know it sounds crazy, but like you got to be able to shoot shots that are kind of crazy sometimes, and be able to and to do that. And so for me, it's just that's what it is.
I just want to say really quickly, Braden, like you mentioned that, like, oh, you know, like I'm going to work on the shots that I'm going to take in the game. Although when I saw you at UCLA in pregame, you were putting down some nasty dunks. And I just want to say, like, I feel like you do have some underrated athleticism that even on a play like this, right, like with the speed that you're coming off this screen and then the elevation you get on your jumper, I do feel like athleticism is a part of your game, although maybe not like the first thing that's talked about.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that. I think people that say I don't have athleticism aren't very smart. And I'll say that to their face because I don't know what they're watching. And like for me, like you see me grab a rebound, my head's at the rim. Just because I don't dunk in a game doesn't mean I'm not athletic.
Yeah.
Like I'm all over the place. I'm moving all the time. I'm doing those things. So to me, when it's funny that just when people say that, I just laugh. But I appreciate that.
I also saw you in Rutgers almost punch a 360.
Yeah.
Which, so, yeah. And it also shows up, like, defensively, like, in your steal rates, your block rates, and like you said, your rebounding. For somebody who is sub 6 feet, like, there are athletic indicators outside of dunking that show up, like, in your statistical profile and on film.
Yeah.
And the other thing, like, with your size that I think is important going back here is you do play with a lot of physicality. So like on this possession, like you're so patient here seemingly because I think you're okay. Like you're inviting Wagler to come and make contact with you. Right. So like, yeah. What is your goal on this possession?
I mean, for me, obviously he's being aggressive, and two, like right here, that pause right there, I'm waiting. Cause Wagler wants to go under it. So right in that top of the key area, I'm gonna pause and kind of, you kind of saw it in the clips before, like with Michigan ones, like how I would stop for a second, let him kind of chase over the top and then go, because then it just makes my job so much easier to come off, and then he's gonna be so far behind. It's just one of those things, and it's just another read with Illinois. They've played a deep drop all 4 years, and that's just what they do. They live and die by it. That's what they do. Mm-hmm. So to me, it's, I have to be patient those games and use the screen, because if I use those screens, I'll get whatever I want. And it's self-explanatory from there, really.
You've mentioned like other teams' schemes, and like there are things that like are clearly still stuck in your head. How much like are you somebody who studies a scouting report and watches film throughout your career?
I mean, it's one, really important, but two, like it just makes you that much better. Because if you go in the game understanding, like, okay, like, you know what they're doing. Like, if you go into a job interview and you know the questions you're getting asked, you're going to prepare for those questions, right? Like, if they gave you the sheet before and they're like, these are the top 5 questions we're going to ask you, you're going to prepare that answer. It's the same thing. So for me, it's just watching film, understanding. Like, I played in the Big Ten for 4 years, that teams don't normally switch up. Obviously, some do, but most of the teams stay the same. So for me, it's just understanding, okay, like, Michigan State always plays this way. Illinois always plays this way. Michigan's been different. Like sometimes they've been dropped. Sometimes they've played zone. Sometimes they're 5-way like they were last year. So like you got to adjust to those. But for the most part, like you know going into the game, and it's important to know like, okay, Jackson's going to guard me probably, but they're going to switch 5 ways. Be patient, use the screen, and I'll have a 4 or 5 on me. Get what I want. So like it's just those small little things.
And outside of even just like schematically or like, are you studying like personnel too? Cause like in my conversations with NBA guys, like the one thing that I think they've relayed to me that like has helped them like defensively is like, these are their tendencies. And like, I can kind of anticipate certain things and make like educated guesses in certain ways. So how much have you gotten into like the tendencies of the guys on the scouting report too?
No, it's definitely real. Like it's an actual thing. And I think for me, like I watch so much basketball in my free time. Like that's all I do. And honestly, I'd say I'm a pretty boring person for the most part outside of basketball. And but like that's what I do. Like I watch games. I obviously been in the league for 4 years of the league, Big Ten for 4 years. And for me, like I've played against most of these guys. I've seen them. I know them. Like I know what they're trying to do. I know what Jeremy Fears is trying to do. I know what Donovan Dent is trying to do. I know what these guys are trying to do because I've watched them and I've played them. Like NBA, I feel like I could genuinely go to each roster and I could probably write you on each guy what they're going to do, what they like to do, what they why, those type of things. I could probably do that. And for me, it's just like I play 2K a lot and that doesn't help necessarily, but it does a little bit.
It does. Yeah.
I watch a lot of NBA games. Yeah. I watch a lot of like YouTube. So like for me, like you see these things and you watch them all the time. So like you're just like, all right, like I don't know, Jalen Brunson likes to go right and shoot it. Left, he's shooting the floater, whatever the case is. Like you can kind of start to pick out those things. I think it's just having I think everybody talks about the offensive IQ. I think I have defensive IQ, being in the right spots at the right time, understanding like, okay, like this could happen. Luka likes to do this. Steph Curry likes to do this, whatever. Like we got to be ready for this. Like this is what they run, that type of thing. So I think it's more into it that people think. And people just like to put size as a factor. And that's the only reason why someone can't be good, which doesn't make sense. And that's why people don't actually understand basketball. That's why I kind of get a little fired up about it. And not even for me. Not even just for me. Like in general, like Jalen Brunson, like everybody said about Jalen Brunson. Like if you're a good enough basketball player and you understand the game, you will be good.
Yeah. Yeah. Just really quickly, the Brunson point I think is important because it's like with Brunson, it's always about the size. And they, because of his size, they say stuff like he can't guard in the playoffs. They're going to take advantage of him, blah, blah, blah. And yet I loved what you said about the intelligence, the positioning, all that stuff's really important. Brunson's always at the top of the league and taking charges, right? He plays with a physicality. You know, he might not be the longest, fastest, twitchiest athlete, but he knows where to be, when to be there, and how to keep his man in front of him. And that's a part of being a part of the team scheme and team concept where, yeah, like your point, they're not going to put Brunson on a shooter who's running off screens all over the place. They're strategic about where they place him, and then he does his job. And I think when NBA teams ask you these questions about your height and playing defense, I think it's that exact answer that I think is going to be so important about your intelligence, knowing where to be, and then playing with toughness, right? And I think that's a really important
point. Yeah, because I don't think anybody will ever question that. Like anytime the ball has been on the floor, I've been there. Anytime that it's been a hustle play, like I've sacrificed my body jumping in the crowd multiple times. Like how many times do you truly see that? And I don't think you do. And I think that's people, because it's not a stat either. Like you don't get a stat for having an IQ or understanding the game of basketball. That and people that don't understand basketball don't know that. They're like, oh, well, his thing says 8 points, 12 rebounds, 4 turnovers, and 18 assists. So he's not athletic. Like, come on, bro. Are you actually watching the game? Or do you understand the game of basketball? And I think that's like what a lot of it is. And I think Brunson just kind of showed it to the next level of why that's not shouldn't be a factor.
Now, back into your film, right? Like you talked about the mid-range shot. That's your layup. Like, why am I going to go all the way? But, you know, you do have to be a three-level scorer and a threat. Yeah. Obviously, like you have the quickness. You mentioned like you used to rely on it. You have this really underrated burst. But I do like how crafty you are too. And on this possession, it seemingly, and I don't know if this is intentional or you were just like improvising because you're hooping, but you use the opposite side of the glass to kind of protect the contest.
Yep. No, 100%. And I knew because he's going to try to be aggressive. He was already being aggressive with Trey the entire time. So when you know it big, and this isn't a shot at bigs, but you can get them here. And I think for me, like, it's using speed. It's using change of direction. Like sometimes I'll even be like, hey, come set the screen here. He's going to go like that. Right as I see that, I'm gone. Like it's just a bunch of different things that you kind of can mess around and play with. Like it's honestly like a game within the game. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the fun part about it is like I mess around so much in that type of way Like it makes things easier. And yes, obviously when I'm saying my mid range is my layup, not that I'm not going to shoot a layup. No, like I'm going to shoot a layup. It's just the right time when and when not to. Like that's the right time to do it. I have an angle. I'm in front of them. I got speed over that. Like that's the right time to do so. Like, but if it's like he's coming over help to jump with me and I'm jumping with him, like that's stupid. But yeah, like same thing here. It's the same thing. Like I have an angle. No one's there to help. And it's just using speed and get to the other rim because obviously those bigs are going to try to get there and block it, shield it away, and get a bucket.
Easy. Now, take me through this one. What maybe could you have done differently here? And it seems like you were trying to get into the body and draw a foul, but what are your other options here?
I should have played off two a little bit more and either one, used it and just shot the left-handed hook shot. And to me, I put my head down a little too much. I should have looked up earlier because I got caught under the rim, and that's why it flipped up like that. And I think for me, just get my eyes up earlier so I can see the rim. Or two, just shoot my mid-range, just floating left. I think that's probably what I honestly should have done. But you can obviously pick and choose 20 different things you could have done differently. But I would say those three are probably the main three.
You also have reads too. Like, I mean, cause somebody's digging at the nail here. So like, you know, they might contest your mid range, but as you get deep, like right here, you know, you probably got those two reads too. Cause that guy's splitting, like whatever way he chooses, it's either a one more or it's an open shot.
Yeah. I think it's just a slow step too. Just get into his body. Then you have a wide open layup cause no one's stopping that. Or if Carr wants to help out of the corner, then I'm capable of making that pass over there.
Yeah. Yep. 100%. And just one more here, showing your burst. Because, you know, the thing with Merez that everybody has been talking about throughout this season and through their run and through the pre-draft process is like, oh, how mobile he is for a big. And here, I mean, he's giving you a little space and you still beat him to the rim. So talk to me a little bit about that first step burst and your speed. And, you know, you've kind of said that you've learned to control it. But how do you utilize it like you do here as a weapon?
Yeah, no, it's just obviously with bigs, like you'll always have the advantage just because, I mean, as a smaller guard, you're going to be quicker. Like that's part of it. And probably like you can use your mind a little bit probably better than a big for the most part, not all instances, but for most. And for me, it's just like understanding the game, understanding what's happening, understanding what's working, what's not working. Like for me, like I'm getting past him, I'm getting past, Mara, like that's just what my mindset was, and I was gonna do it until they stopped me, and that game I couldn't.
Brandon, really quickly, you've mentioned this a couple times now, but there seems to be, when you talk about the mind game against bigs, right, there seems to be for you in your mind, most bigs you're gonna beat them in the head game, right, in terms of like, you know, outsmarting them on the court. At the same time, you've also played with some really good bigs, right, and smart bigs as well. Talk to us a little bit about what you've seen from them that make them elite bigs, you know, other than just them being tall and lateral or whatever. Talk to us a little bit about what an elite big looks like to you.
Discipline. That's the biggest thing. Like if you have an undisciplined guy who's jumping at every shot fake, doing those type of things, like that's the type of guy that you probably don't want. And like for me, like I'm a smaller guard, so they're going to try, if I do get past, to block everything. And if that's to bump and shoot the midi, like they're going to jump every single time. So for me, it's just using that to my advantage. Unless their coach is yelling to stay down on the side, then I'm going to shoot it. But for me, it's not even about Merez or anybody else. Like, that's not a shot against anybody. It's just bigs in general. Like normally that's just how they are. Like you can, they're going to try to block you cause you're smaller. It's like me versus my little brother out in the backyard. Like it's just, you know, it's what it is. So being disciplined, I think, is part of it, but also just having an understanding of the game. If they have an understanding of the game, a true feel for the game. And I think like those Michigan bigs, they have an understanding for the game. Like they understand it. They're obviously they've shown that and proven that at a very high level and about to, you know, make a lot of money doing that. So I think it's just having that balance of those two and just having a feel for it. So
now Purdue is also like big man you.
Yeah.
So how much, I mean, and you guys aren't just getting footers, you're getting footers plus a couple of inches too. So how much do you think that being in practice and practicing against guys like Zach or Daniel Jacobson or the number of dudes who were 7'2", 7'3", 7'4", has helped prepare you for games like Michigan or are going to prepare you for the next level?
Helps a lot. Helps tremendously. And obviously during the year, we're not necessarily playing against each other at that point, just because it's more versus scout team and that type of thing. But in the summer, like, it helps. Like, it just being able to learn. You try things. Like, people are like, oh, you just airballed a layup. Well, yeah, I'm shooting a hook shot from whatever because I'm working on it. Like, it's, you got to work and try different things because you don't know what, you know, the game's gonna what's gonna, you know, end up happening in the, at the end. Like, maybe that's the best shot you get, and you got to be able to shoot those shots, or you got to whatever. Like that and one I got on Mara with the shot fake, and it was like a laser end. Like, you never know. Like, if things happen. So for me, it's just that. But again, too, like, I'm always the shortest on the court, so to me, it feels like I'm always working on something when it comes to that. So, but yeah, no, definitely in the summer, having guys like Zach, Daniel, even Clough and Trey, like having those guys, it helps a lot.
100%. Now, just a few more clips before we get you out of here. And, you know, here we go. We see your anticipation and your on the defensive end and your speed. But I want to talk a little bit about, like, your ability to play out in transition and get things going. And I mean, this is a fun little clip because, again, you hit him with a little behind the back. So take me through, like, what you're trying to do when you are running in transition in a position like this where you got a 2-on-1.
Obviously, first thing you're looking at is who the defender is, like, who, if you're capable. Like, I probably could have just slowed step and shot a layup because he's just running through. Like, so I probably could have did that. But at the end of the day, like, if it's a 2-on-1, I'm not going to go shoot a contested layup. Like, why not just make the right play, an easy play? And just get a bucket. So it's just like it's instincts and read. And I just think that's the smarter decision at the time.
Yeah. And then this one too. Again, like, this is, you're in the right spot. You close off that baseline and then the underhand pass.
Yeah, you got it all. Underhand, behind the back, whatever. But for me, like, I know with him, he's gonna try to get to the rim and try to overpower me being the low man there. And to give myself credit, I think I have I'm a lot stronger than people think, and I'm obviously, I use my brain when playing too. And if a big's gonna show the ball, I'm just gonna take it and go, because that's the level I'm at. I'm down there. So, like, for me, if he's just gonna go right there like that, it's gonna be a steal. And then obviously it's a simple read, just having Clough on the floor, and it's a guard who didn't really have his back turned until the Big Ten logo, which by that point it's too late. So it's a simple read.
It's a simple read for you.
Yeah. I mean,
the read might be simple. The pass is a little more complicated. And then last one, because I think this is really important, especially when you're talking to younger kids. Talk to me about the importance of leading your man and trusting your man when you're throwing ahead.
You know, I think that's what, I think I was very lucky at Purdue, like, very fortunate just to be around a bunch of great dudes, like, first of all, one, and two, like, we were so connected off the court that it made on the court stuff so much easier. Like, if we did have a miscommunications and me and Fletch are cussing each other out because we're both upset with each other over something, like, we're not going to take that personally and get, you know, butthurt about it. Like, we're like, all right, like, we're both saying it because we both care. We both want to win. And maybe we both had a miscommunication. Like, it's part of it. It's basketball. Like, if you're not arguing or getting upset about things and you don't love the game of basketball or care enough to want to win. And that's just how we are. And it's kind of similar to this. Like, I know Jakari's running the floor. We work on it. He's done it all summer. And I'm glad it took him till past half court for him to start running, but finally did. And he gets rewarded for it. And it's like those small things, like, closed out, did his job. Saw we got the rebound. He's running, ran the floor and stole us two easy points. So,
and then the ball placement too, which I think is something that is really important. I mean, he catches that almost in stride with his right hand away from where the defender can't get it. So I think, again, like, that feels very intentional that you're throwing it to that spot.
Yeah, I mean, it's also understanding, like, it's weird, like, in the Jordan documentary, how Dennis Rodman looks at the way that the ball hits on the rim. Like, it's literally like that. Like, it's weird like that. Like, I notice, like, how I throw the ball, how the bounce is going to be, where it's going to go. Like sometimes I'll put a, like a curve on it so it spins. So I'm going to throw it way in front of him, but it's going to come back right to his hands. Like I do those type of things. And with them also in transition, like I think it was something Stewart. Is it Isaiah Stewart? No, that's not right.
No.
Something Stewart right there. Never
Sean
I don't even remember.
Sean Stewart.
You're right. Sean Stewart, he's a bigger guy. I think he played the four, sometimes even the five for them. Yep. So, like, for me, you go lower because he's not – I mean, it's going to be harder for him to get that because he's got a lot more to go down than a guard would have to. So, it's just throwing it in front of him. Obviously, Jakari's athletic enough and quick enough to go get it, and I trust him to get it. He trusts me to throw it to him and got a bucket out of it.
I think for me, like earlier when I asked about passing and I asked about like, is this innate or is this something you can work on? I feel like possessions like this really reiterate for me, like you do need to be born with it a little bit. And when I evaluate passers, I talk a lot about ball placement. I talk about vision, anticipation, because I feel like some of that stuff can't be taught. And I genuinely believe, and it's not because you're on the pod with us, but like this type of pass, you talked about like that curve or the backspin that you're putting on the ball to get there. Like that's maybe something you could work on, but even that I think is really instinctual. And I think just you see a play like this and it's like, yeah, I would love for, you know, kids out there to be able to learn from this, but I think a big part of this has to be innate. Like it has to be in you a little bit.
A couple more questions before we get you out of here, but I mean, look, we're mere days away. So you've been sitting down with teams, working out with teams, interviewing, all that stuff. Basketball outside of it being a game is a business, right? Like teams are trying to make money. They're investing money into the players. So as you're sitting down with these teams, and maybe they've asked you this question, maybe they haven't, but like, what would be your elevator pitch as to why an NBA team should invest in Braden Smith?
Well, I think like, obviously everybody's different, but one, like, I think out of everybody in this draft class, I've had the like resume wise, like the type of not necessarily pressure, but the type of like what the weight I had to carry every single day. Like other guys didn't have to do that. Other guys didn't have to. I don't know the word. I'm dropping on the word, but like
responsibility.
Responsibility, like the amount of time I've played, like the amount of stuff that I've done, the amount of stuff I have to do, like those type of things. I think that's overlooked a little bit. I would say that's one, but two, I'm just a winner. Like I do the little things to win. I'm a problem solver. I've always been able to solve everything. Like, and I'm not making myself to be perfect because I'm not, but like being able to understand it is more about the problem solving part. Like going into the league, like most likely I'm going to compete for it, but most likely I'm not going to take a starting position. Like it's probably not going to happen. And I'm going to make my way to that point because I know I put a lot of time in and I care about it. But for me, it's just how can I make my 3 to 4 minute spurt special and how can I impact a basketball game? And it's not going to be with the load I had at Purdue. It's not like I got 3 to 4 minutes, maybe max, like to be able to go out there, pressure the basketball, cause some, you know, like I said earlier, just try to cause some turnovers and cause some confusion defensively, and then try to make them, you know, go fast, turn it over, do those type of things. And then offensively, just keep doing what I've been doing. Make the simple read, make everybody else better, which I think I do better than everybody. And I think I have a resume to back that up and to prove that. So for me, it's just, you know, you need a chance.
Braden, can I've actually never said this to a prospect before, but I think as we're wrapping up our pod, something that is like really connecting in my brain listening to you is that in your elevator pitch, the one thing I would add that kind of encapsulates everything that you said, dude, I actually think you're a phenomenal leader. And the reason why I say that is because other than basketball, one of my big passions in life is leadership. I'm always reading and watching videos about both like corporate leadership, but leadership anywhere. And one of the three tenets that I always touch on when I'm like at work or working with people is trust, innovation, and credibility. And I think those three tenets you've hit on consistently in our pod today. You talked about the trust that you've built with your teammates, the amount of work you put in with your bigs, your teammates off the court, that you mentioned like you and Fletch, right? Like you guys will get into argument, but it's one shared goal. You have that trust with him. Innovation, working on your game constantly, trying things is something you talked about. And then credibility. Dude, throughout this podcast, you've talked about the amount of work and the amount of confidence you have in yourself and how much you are sure about yourself as a basketball player. And I think I've never said this to a prospect, but I think your superpower, if I had to kind of boil it down, is that you're a phenomenal leader. And that's something that I really wanted to say to you, because like listening to you, it was like I was getting excited, because these are the types of things about I would talk about at work with my team, and like why we want to be great and how we're going to be great is by touching on these three tenets. And with you, man, like just doing this pod, seeing the type of leader that you are, and like even as you were giving your pitch, you were like, oh, I don't really know how to say it. You're a leader, man. That's exactly what it is. And if and you being so aware of what your role is going to look like in the NBA as like a second unit guy, most of these NBA teams are looking for a leader to come off their bench and lead their second unit. And I think that's something you're going to be able to do. And I just wanted to tell you that to your face, man. I've been really impressed.
Well, I appreciate that. It obviously means a lot. It's been a lot of work, because I've always been a quiet lead by example guy on the court. I know sometimes it may not seem that way because I'm always yelling and screaming, that kind of thing. But like, it's always been that way. It's been a lot of hard work my junior and senior year of to do that. So I appreciate you saying that. But like, no, it's like, it's not to make myself out to be somebody I'm not. Like that's just truly how I see it. Like I think like you got to earn trust with your teammates. You got to do those things. You got to hold yourself credible and accountable at the same time. Like you got to do those things. And it's one, important, but two, it also makes everybody else around you better and your organization better. So
yeah. And just to piggyback off of that, which are a couple of things that came to mind. Like you say that, you know, it's leading by example, but like also when I've seen you play, like when there's a timeout, you're not running back to the bench. You're going to dap up your teammates and talk to your teammates and things like that. And then I think if there's anything that people get from this is that you are supremely confident, but there's a self-awareness within that confidence that I think is really important, because you do have to be almost overconfident to be an NBA player. There are a lot of players that don't have the self-awareness of who they are in the moment or where they, what they have to do to get there. And I think you have that. So like overconfidence can rub people the wrong way without self-awareness.
Yeah.
But you play, you have a self-awareness, and like you said, you hold yourself accountable. So if you're holding yourself accountable, it allows you to be able to hold everybody else. And as the leader, as the quarterback, you know, I think you, the responsibility, it's like you're the quarterback of the team.
Yeah.
You sound like you relish in the fact of having that weight on your shoulders.
It's all I've ever known. And I think for me, that's what makes, like, that's another superpower of mine is that and being able to do that. And I think like as far as our teams go, is as far as your leader goes. And if you're doing those things, you're showing, leading by example, by high-fiving your guys, doing those things, doing the small stuff, like it goes a long way. And we did a DISC assessment. I don't know if you've ever done one of those, the natural learning style and then your leadership style. So we take those tests. Like, it's like, okay, like, what are you most likely out of four sentences? What are you least likely? Like those type of things. And like, so me, I studied those about my teammates, like to be like, all right, like with Trey Kaufman Wren, like you got to be positive with him. Like, can't be negative with him. You got to talk to him. You got to be that way with him. You got to be that way with Daniel. You got to be with that way with some guys, because they take it differently. My dad was my coach growing up, so I've been kicked out of practices. I've been kicked out of games. I've been kicked out of whatever because we've butt heads. It's like I can take that. Fletch can take that. So like I can talk to him that way. We can talk to each other that way. Can't talk to Trey that way. Can't talk to some other guys that way. And that's just like, I think that's the evolution that like I do give myself some credit for, is like at least this last year of like truly understanding like everybody's different. Everybody learns a different way, and you got to find that out, because if everybody's on the same page and I can talk to Trey a certain way and maybe he's not starting off great, then I got to pick him up and I know how to pick him up. Same with Fletch, same with myself. So like to hold myself accountable, you can hold other people accountable because you have that respect along with it.
Man. Braden, I've been looking forward to this once, you know, once we knew it was on the table, and your guy, I've been watching you closely your whole career, and I've gotten to see you play in person, I don't know, over a handful of times. And, this was a ton of fun, man. Like I said, doing this with point guards is my favorite thing, because I do think that you guys see the game differently than other positions. So I appreciate you, you know, taking a lot of time out of what is a very busy schedule and giving us that perspective to, you know, share with everyone who's going to watch this.
Yeah, no, I mean, thank you guys. I mean, it's obviously fun. I don't think it's taking time because you're talking basketball, talking hoops, and this is what I would do in my free time no matter what. So whether I'm talking to people about it or I'm looking at it, watching it, it's what I do. So thank you guys for having me, and I appreciate it.